Now on the Business Radio X Network, just Ask the Gals, social media solutions and education.
Well, everyone, we're here to welcome you back to another episode of Ask the Gals with Two Busy Gals coming to you out of Tucson, Arizona. We are excited today for another podcast. This is going to be an awesome, awesome session for you to listen to. We are talking to three business owners about what challenges and things have they experienced being women in business, and how has social media either helped with those challenges or made them worse, because we know it can go both directions. So, first off, I'm going to introduce my co-host for the day, another gal, which is Lisa Benson.
Hello, everybody.
I'm glad she can be here with us today. And we've got Shelley. I cannot pronounce your last name, but I know you'll tell it to us.
Krenyak.
Okay, awesome. I spelled it like Krenaki. I had to check it like three times.
I answer to anything.
So Shelley, tell us the name of your business and what your business does.
My business is Creative Juice, where you can come in and discover your inner artist. We're a social art paint and sip establishment, where we will walk you through the painting of the day and you leave with a masterpiece and a memory.
Awesome. And how long have you been in business?
Almost 7 years.
7 years.
Yes.
Very cool. And you're a place we can come to. So what we call a brick and mortar in
Correct.
The business. Awesome. We've got Morgan Lang with us.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Tell us a little bit about your business.
My business is Azuli Language Solutions. I provide services in English and Spanish translation and interpretation. I
Very
also
cool.
do transcription, editing, proofreading. I'm a writer and communicator by nature. So that's anything in communication in English and Spanish.
Wonderful. And so your business probably can be serve people anywhere.
Absolutely.
Because you're able to do things virtually. Very
Absolutely,
cool.
Absolutely, yep.
Awesome. All right, and then we have the amazing Allison Lombard with us. And what, Allison, tell us what, I actually want, Allison has a wealth of experience. So she has two businesses I want her to talk about. So tell me about the first business that you had for in excess of 20 years, and then tell me what you're doing now.
Okay, well, thanks, Jessica. And Lisa, it's good to see you too. I was for 25 years in the commercial construction business as an owner with my husband. So back in those days, there really weren't a lot of women that were actively involved in the construction business, especially in the commercial side.
Absolutely.
So fast forward 25 years from then, and now I am an independent associate with a company called Legal Shield.
Awesome. And you've been doing that, I think, 9 years.
Almost. This will be my 10th year.
Awesome. So we've got a lot of variety of businesses that was purposeful, and variety of kind of ages and stages of when people. I don't think I asked you, Morgan, how long has your translation business been?
Officially as a business, about a year.
About a year.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. And so we've got businesses, Two Busy Gals. You guys know we've been in business 11 years. The first year was not social media. We were out there hoofing it at vendor shows, selling jewelry and purses and makeup and you name it. Yeah, we were hoofing it, hauling stuff around, gift baskets in the back of the car, going to gas stations, all that. Lisa's not sorry she missed that stage. But we early on realized that social media was going to be a great way for us to improve our expertise knowledge as we were building our business. So we kind of used social media as business school, because when you don't have money for business school and you're changing careers and start a business, it's kind of a good place to go. And basically, people wanted help. I had a background in training and curriculum development, and people were like, hey, what do you mean you're using Facebook? So around the time Allison was getting on board with what she does, we were training people how to use Facebook for business, and we haven't stopped since, so it's pretty exciting. So Lisa, I'm going to hand it over to you. We've got some stuff for some one of our discussion topics. We have a variety of topics, and everyone can jump in and answer. And as people listen to the podcast, feel free to email us and reach out to us. We would love to hear from you.
All right. On paper, things have never looked better for female entrepreneurs. In fact, more than 11 million U.S. firms are now owned by women, employing nearly 9 million people and generating $1.7 trillion in sales. According to 2017 data from the National Association of Women Business Owners. Let's start with Jessica. What inspired you to open your own business?
So I don't know so much it was an inspiration as it grew out of necessity. So we started our business. I keep saying we because it's my sister and I, which is kind of funny because later one of the things we're going to talk about is that women often don't take credit for our accomplishments. So we don't say I do. But I started the business because I worked in a nonprofit industry and I still have a chronic illness. I'm not a secret. I have rheumatoid arthritis. It's autoimmune. And part of the reason I moved to Arizona with the business was to improve my health. In fact, when I started the business, I was having days of bedridden life. And prior to moving to Arizona, I had multiple days where I was bedridden and we were struggling with the business. So I think out of necessity, I needed to have something that was flexible enough that the service and work we provided, you know, no one really cares if I took a shower or if I'm in pajamas, if I'm writing content and posting it on social media. They want my mind, not my fancy hair and mascara for the day or what have you. So it really grew out of necessity. I would never go back to traditional employment. I mean, everyone has days where you're like, paper or plastic sounds like a really good question to ask people today. Like, that's all I want to ask people. But I'm so thankful to have the opportunity. You know, this year we were growing and adding people and to be able to provide a work environment where if someone comes and they have a chronic health issue, we find ways to work around that. We don't see that as a detriment. We think that they can be the most loyal and amazing workers because we create an environment that supports that.
What about you, Shelley? What inspired you to open your own business?
I was teaching before we opened Creative Juice, and I think my business partner and I, Christina Valencia, were looking for just a creative outlet, something that would allow us to use our creativity to create a happy place for us, really, and then share it with other people. So we kind of see our business as bringing art to the masses in a safe environment, and it makes us happy and gives other people a safe environment to try something new.
That sounds good. How about you, Morgan? So what made you think of going business route? Obviously, you had training and background in being a translator and interpreter. So right. Why start your own business?
I think the key is that I've worked for a lot of other organizations and companies. And I certainly don't want to come across as arrogant saying this, but I find that management is really poor in a lot of workplaces. And I never necessarily wanted to be the boss, mm-hmm. but I wanted to work in an environment where I was rewarded for my hard work and it paid off. And there are certainly many agencies where I could work doing translation and interpretation where they make 99% of your money. And yes, they run the show and they get the clients and they do have the overhead costs and what have you, but I'm done working for other people to make fortunes off my back.
Yeah,
I guess
no,
we could put it that way.
I think that's a totally fair way to put it. We had some similar experiences the first 2 years while we were figuring out what we were doing. We white labeled for some marketing firms. So white labeling means at one point I had 8 different emails, Jessica@something, because they wanted it to appear as if we were in their office. Did I do something?
I don't know.
You're right. Okay. they wanted it to appear as if we were in their office, but of course we weren't. And so I experienced a similar to what Morgan's expressing where yes, they got the clients, and certainly they got clients that wouldn't have hired us. They wouldn't have hired Two Busy Gals. But what we do know is that what we found was that they weren't able to create our content so that we could go forward with them. So in other words, it was like we could go for smaller, middle-sized businesses and make more money. And also, what we were bringing to the table, they couldn't create. Mm-hmm. And so we realized we were offering something very unique that they were making the money off of.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I can relate to that. I want to run a business with integrity mm-hmm. and the principles that I value. And I've worked in a lot of different organizations and workplaces, and I find that sometimes is more often than not is missing. And I think I just got to a point in my life where I decided, you know what, I'm going to try to do this on my own and
Absolutely.
See how it goes. So like I said, I've been in business about a year, and it's certainly a new experience for me. But I'm learning a lot, and I'm up for the challenge, and I'm excited to Cool. see what I can do.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. So Allison, what inspired you to come on your current journey? So you told us a little bit about construction, commercial construction, but what made you diverge and go on your current journey, which is a little different?
Oh yeah, it's a lot different. And I think that the biggest thing for me is that I was introduced to something that I knew nothing about. Legal Shield is a product that is sold through direct sales. Mm-hmm. So unless you know somebody that's working in the business, chances are you've never heard of it before. And so I have a little, you know, it's kind of an odd story. My business partner, who at the time was my ex-husband, passed away. He passed away without a will, so he died intestate. So that being said, we were divorced. He was the majority stockholder in our company. And that meant that the attorneys stepped in for the estate and started kind of dictating to me what I could or couldn't do. And at Jim's memorial service, I reconnected with a very old friend of both of ours, and we just started to chat, and he introduced me to Legal Shield.
Awesome. So it came, that kind of came born out of necessity.
Well, I tell you what, I think about it, and now that I know more about it, I keep kind of kicking myself and thinking, oh my goodness, my employees could have used this as well as myself.
Ah.
So I'm just, for me, it's just all about sharing, because really at the end of the day, not everybody knows about Legal Shield, and they at least need to know about it, whether it's right for them or not, that's their decision, but at least they won't go away in ignorance.
Awesome. Okay. So we've talked a little bit about what inspired you to open your businesses, and we've got all different levels of business and experiences. So the first topic, and this is, we're not going to kind of go person, just jump in. The first topic that was in this article that talked about challenges women face in business is defying social expectations. And one of the things, and I would extend that to family and support with quotes around it, support network expectations, because sometimes the people around you who are supporting you when you start a business aren't maybe as supportive as they could be. They could be family, it could be friends, it could be old coworkers from where you left working. So just share a little bit about your experiences, either going to networking meetings or meeting with people, like challenges that you felt. So I recently went to a networking meeting I'd never been to before, and only two women were there that were not spouses of the males that were present. And I'd not experienced that in a long time, because a lot of, you know, tend to go some... I couldn't really recall a predominantly male networking meeting I'd been to lately, but that was interesting because we went round robin. You know, you three or four people moved down. It was about 30 people around a large banquet size table, and the wives didn't speak. So, like, if they were across from you, they didn't really talk. They would just sort of like be, "Oh, my husband runs a business," and then said nothing. Wow. And anyone who knows the gals knows, we gab a lot, maybe myself at the top of the list. And so that was sort of interesting that their spouses came with them to this networking meeting, and they were invited. I mean, on the invitation, it says bring partners, spouses, et cetera. But it was a little interesting to network in that environment where it was very male dominated. So I guess, do you feel like you've had any challenges as you've been building your business on expectations? Either from friends or family, and anyone, go ahead, Allison.
Well, I would say, you know, getting back to the construction, one of the things that my husband and I got married just weeks before we started our construction business, and I didn't change my last name. So we had two different last names. And I think for a small business like that, it gave us a little more depth.
Mm-hmm.
And I pulled it off so well that years later, an architect that I was doing some work for didn't like this job site superintendent, which happened to be my husband, but he didn't know he was insulting my husband.
Wow.
Because we had different last names.
Interesting.
So I attend a lot of different networking meetings for Too Busy Gals, and something I always try to do is meet someone new. So I always try to sit at a table with people I don't know. And there's a lot of the groups that have a lot of men in them who've been doing this for 25 years or so, and they talk to each other, and I'm the person that comes in and kind of ruins their talk, and they don't want to talk to me. They don't even ask me what I do. I'm the one who says, well, what do you guys do? And they're so busy talking to each other that they've known each other for so long. So it really makes it challenging to get our name out and our, get to meet new people, because they are very closed to having me there, whether it's because I'm a woman or I'm younger than them. I don't know.
You don't have that experience with women?
No.
Interesting.
I mean, there are some places where the women are in their little cliques, but I think that's everywhere you go. But I've noticed it more with the men, that it's harder to talk to them than it is to the women.
Interesting. I've not had that experience.
I find that a lot of the networking I do lately, depending on the time of day, I'm either meeting predominantly women, mm-hmm. or maybe in the evenings we'll meet some men. But because of the way I do my business, it's really important to meet brand new people. And so I could turn a networking event into my social evening, but that's not productive for me. So it's been kind of something I've really had to force myself to do. I love meeting and seeing all my friends, but I know you, and so I need to go talk to somebody else that I don't know.
Well, we have, Allison and I have a mutual friend who actually was a guest on our first episode, and Kim Webb is very adamant. Like, if you go up to her at a networking meeting, she'll be like, I'm sorry, I know you, and haven't met my three people tonight, so I can't talk to you until after I've met my three people. And she's very forthright and blunt about it. The better a friend you are with her, the more blunt she is. But she's so focused on that goal that I actually find that inspiring, because sometimes you go to a networking and you know you have to meet new people, but it just feels off. It feels maybe a little awkward. I would say, Morgan, your question about like experiencing it with females, I've experienced it if I'm in a networking group or a professional association that is woman focused. So almost everyone there are women. In fact, maybe there's only one or two males, that I experience more what Lisa's talking about there. But I think it's because the whole room is women, so there are some kind of cliquish type groups. The other thing I've experienced also is sometimes people are sort of like, who do you work for? I have experienced people not really understanding that, ironically, even in 2019, that women can be business owners, even with the numbers that we have.
Is that men or women that ask you that?
It tends to be more men.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
I had that experience when we opened, and I was telling people that we were going to open, and they said, well, who are you going to have help you? I said, well, I'm going to do it myself.
I'm going to open it.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, we had help, but it's because we asked questions and we went around and we figured out what we needed to do. And we didn't have somebody hold our hand. We just kind of, but it was an interesting experience.
It's interesting. And I mean, it's part of why when we came up with the topic for today's show, I wanted to talk about some of these challenges, because I think when we take social media, when we take 24/7 phones, when we take always being able to communicate with each other and lay that over some of the challenges we just have as women in business, some of it gets worse and some of it gets better. I think one of the things for social expectations is that we also have to be careful in the whole, there's a lot of things online talking about nice versus kind, right? You know, like the expectation of women or girls to be nice, right? Mm-hmm. And so does being nice mean I answer emails no matter what time of day, right? You know, things like that. Like, how is it bleeding into this sort of social media aspect of what people's expectations are of you? I know as a mother, Facebook became very challenging for me, because a lot of people wanted to be friends on Facebook. They friend request you. I mean, we've probably all, I mean, has everyone sort of experienced that? You go to a networking meeting and Bob or Sue friend requests you and you're like, did I even talk to this person?
I'm not even sure
I know this person.
Or friends of friends.
That you start to wonder, has this person just reached out to everybody in this one group? Does anyone actually know them?
Do they know them? Mm-hmm. How do I know them? Are they actually connected to this person? Mm-hmm. And I think it becomes, as a parent, what I realized, I was very cautious about putting pictures of, you know, I have a teenage daughter and I have a teenage son. And I was very cautious about the images I shared of them and what was out there. But what happened was I'm friends with my kids' friends' mothers, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So as moms, we're friends with each other on Facebook because our kids are friends. And they started tagging pictures of my daughter because they were at functions together. And all of a sudden I realized we just announced that our girls are at this dance at this school right now. You know, when mm-hmm. we talk about safety mm-hmm. stuff and mm-hmm. everyone's like, don't check in at the restaurant until you're in the parking lot leaving or things like that. And I realized there were over 100 people on my Facebook list of friends that I really didn't know. You know, I mean, I'm not sure we ever had an in-person conversation. And they now knew at 9 p.m. my 14-year-old daughter was at a dance at Empire High School and got to see a picture of her. And it hit me like a ton of bricks. Mm-hmm. Like, wow, I need to think about this. And so we'll talk a little later about balancing business and personal life, but I think those kinds of things, you know, where we're looking at like, how is social media, you know, how is it impacting what we share, when we share, what we're expected to share? Do I need to friend everyone? Those of you who know me know on Facebook, knowing about it was around that time. It was right after homecoming dance. I made an announcement and I said, in 30 days, I'm purging my list and I have a public profile and I would be glad to connect with you on my public profile, but I'm really reducing this. And I think I deleted about 600 contacts.
Mm-hmm. I remember you talking about that.
Yeah, I deleted about 600 contacts and I had people, bless their hearts, I had people who I consider friends who were like, just tell me what list I need to be on. I was like, and I think I only had one or two people who were like, why did you unfriend me? I said, well, it wasn't anything about you. It kind of, once you start clicking, you just click, you know. But I also found that, you know what, maybe with it pretty quickly, about 100 people went right over to that public profile and liked it. And I use the example of Hal Tominski from Envoy Mortgage. We've networked with each other for years. We know each other. He just popped right over to my public profile page, and I don't really think he gave a kitty that we weren't connected on our personal page anymore. So, but it was hard to do that. And people are like, oh my gosh, don't you feel like you're going to offend people? What if people are upset? And it's like, eh, I gave them 30 days to figure it out.
I think that part, that question, don't you think you're going to offend people? Mm-hmm. That's the niceness that so many women are concerned about. And I don't know if men would struggle with that as much, if at all. I don't like using generalizations for men and women, but those are the politeness questions that I think women business owners sometimes don't even realize are driving their decisions or how they approach a situation. And I personally try to be really aware of those things, but it's hard to know what you don't know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of conversations in our house about nice and kind, mm-hmm. those two words. Do you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. you can always be kind, but you don't always have to be nice. You know, like, you don't have to find a way to respond to people that's kind, not aggressive necessarily. Mm-hmm. But if someone's really attacking you, you don't have to just be like, oh, thanks, okay. You know,
that's hard for us all to do, though.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
To not just take it and go home and cry or be mad.
And some days you do. Or mad, or cry when you're mad. Like, right. You're not sad, but crying when you're mad.
Or then internalizing it. I feel like I internalize a lot of things.
And all of that ends up affecting our business decisions.
Absolutely.
Right? You know? Mm-hmm. So next topic, what have we got on board here, Lisa?
Have any of you sought outside funding for your business? And if so, how did that experience go? So women are more conservative and don't overstate projections, said Gloria Kolb, CEO and co-founder of Elida and mentor at UConn's Technology Incubation Program. When we pitch investors, we are often pitching realistic numbers, but men so often overstate and exaggerate that investors often discount the numbers off the bat. Kolb explained that investors who are often men will assume that the women entrepreneurs are operating just like the men and inflating their numbers. Therefore, they will provide funding at lower levels than requested. Women need to understand this dynamic and approach their pitches accordingly. So have any of you sought outside funding for your business, and how did that go?
Well, with my Legal Shield business, no, I can't say that I have. But when my construction business was up and running, we definitely had, you know, large lines of credit that we used. And it was really more based on our financial statements. So we had to provide to the bank 3 or 4 years worth of financial statements before they would look at us and give us, you know, a line of credit. So it was just a process we had to work to get there. But once we got there, that wasn't a problem anymore.
So we just recently applied for and received a business loan from a large bank. And I'm pretty transparent about letting folks know, take advantage of these opportunities when they're presented. They emailed, called us to loan us money. And it had to be, you had to be apply and be approved by the 31st. So I'm pretty sure this not to be named big bank was under pressure to loan money to small businesses and women-owned businesses, because these were unsecured business loans, not lines of credit. Up to, depending on what your statements and your bank stuff looked like, up to $100,000, which is kind of unheard of. I was talking with some folks at Score Mentors, who said, you know, a lot of businesses have said if it's under $1 million, they won't even consider it. I talked to some credit unions a year ago. Someone I knew wanted like $5,000 to $10,000 to help them with cash flow, small female business owner. And I talked to a credit union because I thought, oh, I bet they work on stuff like that. I mean, sure, you go to Chase, National City, Bank of America, Wells Fargo. They're probably like, whatever. But surely a credit union. And the business banker was like, you know, really, if it's under $50,000, they just need to apply for a credit card and deal with credit cards, which I think becomes a challenge, because a lot of women businesses, I think, were very conservative about borrowing money, about looking for lines of credit, about looking for loans, and it hinders us from expanding. And I know I've been in that position myself, because I know I have to bring on people to expand. And so in the business world, they talk about scalability, that most women-owned businesses tend to not be able to scale. So by that, we don't create things. We'll take Shelly, for example, because you have something that maybe could have been franchised if you ever wanted to go that direction. So, you know, seven years ago, she starts up, you know, Sip and Paint. So you're painting and you're drinking, right? And so first brick and mortar to offer that in Tucson.
Correct.
Probably one of the few brick and mortar places offering it exclusively 7 years ago. And so I would guess, you tell me, at some point it flitters through your mind like, hey, we could have more locations, or hey, we could bring on more people. And then it's like, where's the money going to come from? How do we do that?
We did exactly that. And we went to the bank, and we just wanted a $10,000 loan to maybe
just to
start
make payroll,
a second. Right. Or just
pay
to,
some rent at a second place.
Exactly.
Yep.
Pay rent, open up a second of brick and mortar.
Yeah.
And they pretty much said, you know, we can give you a large amount, or you can just get a credit card.
Get a credit card. And so I think... we work with all different kinds of businesses, and some of the male-driven businesses that we've worked with, they don't even blink about, I have an idea, and they haven't even had one customer, and we need to go get a couple $100,000 to start this. And they don't even have customer one. And so whatever it is, whether it's society or us personality, I'm not saying all, because certainly, you know, I agree with Morgan, you can't make broad sweeping generalizations, but we do know in the banking industry, in the venture capital industry, it is predominantly Caucasian men. And one of the things I was reading when I was preparing for this is that investors, like when you say, I have this idea, and you go to a group of investors, so Desert Angels is a group of venture capitalists here in Tucson, and they pick projects to fund. And it is not unusual for a venture capitalist to write a $50,000 check on an idea you haven't even completely executed the technical, I'm going to do this new microphone. We're all talking to microphones. And I think this new microphone can do this and this. And I've got an engineer on board, and I've got this other guy on board, and I got someone who's got a history in radio. And we need like $200,000 to like get going. venture capitalists will give 50 grand if they think it's a unique enough idea and they feel like you're confident about yourself. And I don't think as women business owners, we pursue those avenues strongly enough at all.
I think, oh, sorry.
No, please go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think I lie on the more conservative end of things. You know, when the kids were young and you were planning your meals for the week, or you planned for Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and that was it. And,
right.
So I think in business, we think to a certain point, and to think big sometimes, not that I'm risk averse, but since I did open a business,
yeah,
it just seems huge.
It seems huge.
It seems huge.
Yeah.
You want to make it through that certain small amount of time, and you see that
it's
good.
Take one step before
right.
you plan the
exactly.
next 20.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I can,
it I can
seems
agree.
Strange that they wouldn't want to give you $10,000 because you're not wanting to go too big yet, but you just need a little push and a little help. Right. And women seem to be a little more conservative in that way too, because they don't want to do too much too fast.
Right.
I can relate to that. My business is relatively new, but I did think through some things in the beginning with scalability in mind.
Mm-hmm.
Not that I'm a pro at this or really had much information to work with necessarily.
Sure.
But intuitively, I didn't want to put my name on the business in case one
Absolutely.
Day I want to sell it. I didn't
That's
want to
why
put,
we're two busy gals.
Right. I didn't want to put a location on it, even though I love Tucson and Arizona
yeah.
and I can't see myself leaving. But it can go with me wherever I go. I have moved a lot in and out of the country. And I also find myself in a similar situation where I could certainly use some funding to really expand my business at a quicker rate. But I have not asked for funding at this time. And I think I can relate to some of the things that you're saying, certainly about being hesitant to ask, how to ask, who to ask, resistant to that risk.
I think if I hadn't got that pestering email every 2 days, and here's what's so sad, we actually, Two Busy Gals partners and has had an individual come to our classes and come to our workshops, and many of us know her from networking, that her entire bank only works with commercial accounts, commercial bank accounts and commercial lending, and they do small loans. But I'm not sure I ever fully got that message from meeting with her until I brought up in a training class, because I'm always blathering on about what I just experienced and worked or didn't work. And she goes, we give loans like that. Like, we want to give loans like that. It's a local bank to Tucson. It's local investors in the bank. And they're like, yeah, that's what we want to give. And so I think we've got to figure out, hopefully this podcast and other ways to share that message. I know recently, for me, for social media, how I learned more about it was there was a marketing company called Duct Tape Marketing. And I'm not going to remember the name of the guy who started it, but I used to get his podcasts and read his articles and all his information through Twitter. And he said, you have to make a decision when you start a business if you name it after yourself or if you name it something more generic. Because if you ever want to sell your business, don't name it after yourself, because you can't sell yourself with your business. I guess E.F. Hutton and all those folks, John Hancock.
Right.
Okay, he didn't sell it. It was named after him. Yeah. But
well, the thing that I love is in this community, you're going to, if you start to look, you're going to find what you need. And I think that necessity is the mother of invention. So through the one of the chambers that I am a member of, they had brought in a number of small independent companies, PEP and a few others, that actually work with very small businesses, individuals. They do 5,000 mm-hmm. and up. But all of a sudden, it's like, you start talking about it. I'm a big believer in karma, putting it out in the atmosphere. And then all of a sudden, there are 4 or 5 different companies that's all they do. But again, trying to get that information out to those people that would benefit from it sometimes is difficult.
Absolutely.
That might be a good podcast idea, talking
yeah.
about funding and what to think about.
I like it.
I think that would be
make
really
a note, Lisa,
helpful.
We know I won't remember.
Okay. I'll do it right now.
Okay.
Yeah, so I think that that's really important. And as a follow-up, when we share the link for this podcast, there is currently, and I've been following on her on Twitter, it's an African-American female, young, I don't know if she's even 30, who has put together a venture capital group. She was on the cover, a recent cover of Fast Company, and they have just sort of blown open this space, particularly in Silicon Valley, where a lot of venture capital happens, you know, up at, outside of San Francisco, and really looking at minority and women-owned businesses and changing the dialogue around venture capital at a national level. So I just think, you know, I'll share that information with everybody. I don't want to misquote it here because it just popped in my head, but it's just quite fascinating. That a person could come and she goes, you know, less than three years ago, like she was, I don't know, working on McDonald's Wi-Fi and like, you know, almost living out of her car. I mean, she did not come from a capital background. And she's like, how is it ever going to change if we don't change the dialogue of who's talking and what our expectations are? All right. So we've got another topic here, which we've kind of already addressed, which is struggling to be taken seriously, to be considered a serious business owner. So one of the things I would say on social media completely lends itself to building yourself as an expert. So what are some ways that you've tried to show or demonstrate your expertise digitally, either a website or a blog or something on social media? What have you done to try to create, hey, I am the authority on this that you should work with, which we are not good at doing at all. As females generally, we don't do that very well.
So I just recently took a class, LinkedIn 2.0, so with two busy gals. And one of the things for me is that those are where the people that I want to connect with hang out.
Ah, so that's where your folks that you want to make connections with.
I think so, yes. And so as much as I love my Facebook peeps, and then I do a lot of dog rescue, and yep, there's all sorts of things on there that way, I really need to be seen in the LinkedIn group.
And that LinkedIn really is the easiest platform to allow you to present your expertise, I think.
Well, and people think of it more as a, I need to find a job place. But if you think of it as you're proving yourself to current prospects, they can go there and learn all about you and why they should hire you instead of to do whatever you do, Legal Shield, or why should they go to Creative Juice and not another paint and sit place, or why should they do business with Morgan and her language services, because you're going to really lay out why you're the best and what you've done and where your expertise is. And I think it's not thought of in that way as much as it should be.
And like, who knew Allison had a degree in sociology?
Exactly.
Now we all do.
And that she lived in northwest of the United States.
Right, and I just love to hug trees, so.
It looked kind of tree-huggy. It did. But you know what? What's funny is that may resonate with one of her target clients, you know, because at the end of the day, people do business with people they know, like, and trust. And so you don't know what of your story will connect with one of your potential clients.
As long as you're authentic, I think that's the absolutely most important thing. I've tried to take that bit of advice and pay more attention to it. Mm-hmm. And I've been in the same room as Two Busy Gals a number of times, and I've picked up some juicy information, and I do put it to use. And I appreciate the perspective on social media, how people think, because I don't use social media quite like the masses, I would say. The ones that we're all trying to reach. So when I hear, you know, recently an article or kind of a story came across NPR talking about the president's interpreter being subpoenaed.
Yeah.
And that is obviously right up my alley. And I had quite a reaction to that. You know, that is alarming in our field. So I chose to share that, mm-hmm, and say this is something to look at, pay attention
absolutely
to, you know, keep an
gonna
eye on what's going to happen
what happens
here
in our industry, where it was right sort of like interpreters interpret, and
right
as long as it's verified and it's a verified interpreter, mm-hmm, we're sort of removed from those processes.
Right. We are supposed to, we're not in front of the cameras. We're not,
right,
you know, we're behind a microphone but only because certain people with a headset elsewhere are listening, you know, or
right,
not.
Right.
That was also unusual for me at the Women's March on over the last weekend, the previous weekend, because I was up on stage and very prominent as an interpreter, interpreting for people like the mayor right next to him. And that's not usually the position of an interpreter. We're more hidden. So when an interpreter or something in the field comes into the news, it's pretty unusual. Most people don't know what interpreters are. They kind of have an idea of translation and interpretation. Generally, they don't know the difference. And they don't really know the field unless they've had to use an interpreter translator, which is not a whole lot of people, right? So trying to take that and establish myself as an authority or, you know, a professional in the field is important for me to present myself and my business as legitimate.
Absolutely.
And when people, if they do suddenly find themselves needing a translator interpreter and they find me, then they can look through some of my history, my posts, and say she's had her finger on the pulse about upcoming topics, hot news, issues of the day, that sort of thing.
I think that's a great position, and thank you for the compliments that you get good info from us. We like
absolutely.
To hear that. I just think it's really useful to continue to, it's not building your resume in the sense of hire me because I have this degree. It's sort of more, here's what I know about and here's the asset I can bring to you. And how do we toot that horn? And I'll tell you the one thing that, you know, Lisa came on board and looked at our website and went, okay, hang on. We're in all these organizations. You speak all over the daggone place. We have all, you know, accolades. And none of it's really on our website. And you don't even post it on our own social media. It was kind of like, can we get with it? Mm-hmm. And I realized,
it's like the doctor never going in for a checkup.
Yeah.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
I realized it was some sort of false humility on my part. Like, who would really care? Well, of course people would care. If you're the strategic partner for the Tucson Hispanic Chamber and you do all of the live content at their big gala events, probably someone would like to know that, you know, because maybe there's another chamber that wants to hire you or another large organization that recognizes the scale at which you can do things. So I think it's just really important that we figure out ways to promote ourselves. Do you know? Mm-hmm. Like we seem to be pretty good at what I've observed, especially in Tucson, businesses of, you know, one-on-one at a networking meeting. Hey, I do this and it's great to meet you. But how do we convey that in print, online, in our digital format so that people get the same interaction that we were feel more comfortable doing in person? I don't know if that makes sense or not.
I agree with that. I've had people call me and I ask how they found me. Mm-hmm. And, you know, often it's through the Tucson Hispanic Chamber website. But I know that they look me up on LinkedIn. They look me up on Facebook. They do that research before they call me or email me. So it gives me pause and I go to my own sites, my own platforms, and look through what I've posted in the last 2 months or so and make sure that I'm conveying the message.
Absolutely.
That I want a newcomer to me who doesn't know me, who didn't have the opportunity to meet me in person at a networking event or what have you. I want to know that I am putting out there the best information and the best representation of myself and my business. And if it's not, I take it off.
I think that's great advice. One of the things when people ask us all the time, how many times should we post? How much stuff should I put out there? How much is too much? And it really depends. You know, like in Shelly's case, we want to see a picture of what we're coming to paint for every class you're having, right? Like we have to see that information, you know. I probably never want to see a picture of something Morgan's translating.
Right. It's not really photo worthy.
It's like
it's challenging for me to find content sometimes because, like I said, interpreters are generally in the background or I'm in an attorney's office doing confidential work.
Absolutely.
And I don't advertise where I'm going and what I'm doing or who I'm hanging out with in those situations. So it's a little bit of a mind bender for me sometimes to make my work exciting. I love it, of course.
Absolutely.
I'm fascinated by what I do, but trying to keep that engaging is sometimes challenging.
So I was at the Women's March,
mm-hmm.
and I was in the front watching her and Morgan in action. So did you put a lot of that content on LinkedIn?
Not on LinkedIn, no. I did Facebook Live. It was my first Facebook Live experience. I was working with another interpreter, so I did Facebook Live for him a number of times, and he did for me, took my phone and, mm-hmm. and did that for me. But it's hectic, you know, you're up Absolutely. There with different speakers, and social media can be hectic.
Yeah.
It can be really time consuming. And for me personally, everything I do is bilingual. So I put double work into it. I want to use photos and images that are culturally appropriate for lots and lots of different people. Sometimes maybe that holds me back because I'm trying to appeal to
sure
to maybe too broad of a range of folks. But no, I haven't. And I know that I don't use LinkedIn as much as I should. And that is because I am not on LinkedIn as much, and I probably should be.
I really think after having sat down with Lisa and her explaining, we pulled up all my information, we looked at it, we tweaked it, and I'm really a firm believer that it's not a place where people go nowadays to look for a job. I think you're almost going to find that more on Facebook than you are, you know, I have a friend that's looking for a job, who do you know, type of thing. And you're not going to see it on LinkedIn as much as you used to. So we went through, we kind of cleaned it up a little bit. She explained why you would write what we did and why you'd put it where you did put it.
Yeah.
But it's just, you know, you start to go and you start to pay attention to it and you start to see where all the other people are, how they're connected. And by the time we finished, I'm like, I know this is really where I need to be to appeal to and to be noticed and recognized by the types of people that I want to do business with.
Absolutely. Shelley, share a little bit. There's something you guys do with besides the Sip and Paint. You do something with corporations, some sort of team building.
Yes, I was actually going to say, I think all of our Facebook posts are more fun. And we tend to use LinkedIn for more of our more serious
professional.
Yes, mm-hmm. professional events. So we do a lot of team building or corporate events. We offer them. And I put most of that on our LinkedIn. And we use that to find people and connect with different businesses that might need a team building opportunity, which is a lot of fun too, but just in a different way.
A different audience that right. you're reaching right. that way. Yes.
Because you're looking for team managers or HR right. folks HR. Or people Correct. Who bring in activities for team building.
Right.
Awesome.
So do you conduct those team building?
We do.
Oh, okay.
Yes. Fantastic. And it's still painting, but it's just Fun. More focused on
See, that would drive me to your website to learn more.
And, yes.
Yeah. yeah. Now I'm going to have to go to your LinkedIn and look for those
exactly.
and then share it with a couple okay. of people that I know that are looking for
Give
that.
Give me about 30 minutes.
yeah. When I found out, Shelley and I talked maybe a year ago about that and about you also have the ability to do that remotely.
Correct. We travel.
They mm-hmm. travel and they're able to kind of ship a whole sort of team building activity, which I was like, oh my gosh, you need to do more of that because that's awesome.
Right.
But that's a perfect example of where in social media, it's really important to know who your target market is because the folks that are coming in to your building, your events, probably are not thinking about team building necessarily. But the other thing you want to make sure you do is that that's announced every time you have an event because you don't know who's in the room to have their fun time out, but in the back of their mind is always looking for something to do.
Correct.
Yeah. I realized that when years and years and years ago, I was the parent involvement manager for Head Start preschool program. And I was out on the weekend at the movies, and they had national movie theater chains will do summertime dollar movies and 50-cent popcorn. And we were always looking for stuff for the kids in the summertime because we did a looser curriculum. And, you know, the kids are, you know, they want to have fun too. And so I'm getting all these brochures and my husband's like, what is that for? And I'm like, oh, because this would be a great field trip. And the parent committees raise money for field trips. And if I have this information, and he's like, are you ever off? And I was like, well, yes, but you know, if I see something, you know. So I think that's another piece we wanna make sure. I think sometimes we don't blend our streams, if we could use that expression. So what's another topic we've got going on here? We kind of blended into it already, but let's talk some more.
We were talking about owning our accomplishments and how women are not known for owning their accomplishments. So do you guys see that trait in yourself? If so, how have you overcome it? And have you used social media as a tool to share your accomplishments?
Personally, I think we are the worst at tooting our own horn, I guess, because we host a lot of fundraisers for different nonprofits and organizations. We've worked with, you know, American Heart Association, the Alzheimer's, autism, just regular local high schools. We probably have 3 or 4 fundraisers a month, but no one knows that unless they've arranged one or hosted one. Or
that would be a great update for LinkedIn.
Yes, I know.
Just give her her 30 minutes.
But look at it like monthly. I would just say, oh, check out what happened in February and put up a couple pictures and just a list of them.
Right.
That's a great post for LinkedIn because and then you connect, you can tag all those nonprofits. Even if it's not the local one, you could tag the national one.
Correct. Absolutely.
And it's one of the more profitable fundraisers that I've done for 4-H is what I use it for. But I know other organizations that I've gone to the fundraiser for have just gotten so much out of it. And, yeah, you don't talk about it very much.
I think because for us, it's easy. I mean, it's
even better.
And it's easy for the nonprofit as well because all they do is arrange it,
market it, come get your check.
So you kind of think, well, it's not that big a deal, but it really is.
Yeah. Scream that from the mountaintops.
Yes. Absolutely. Could you make a note, Lisa?
Yes. Lisa will have notes for all of us. Okay.
A to-do list for each one of us.
This one piece that in the same article that talked about this said that women often give away too much expertise before they get a financial commitment from the client. And I know I am way, way guilty of that with our business.
Me too.
Great.
I'm sorry. Well, people catch me at networking events and will say, well, what about Facebook? I just heard this. Should I do it? And I answer because that's what I do, but really I should say, why don't you come to a class and learn more?
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't have to ever worry about that because I right up front tell people I am not an attorney.
True.
So if you're looking for legal advice and you're asking me, well, Legal Shield do this or Legal Shield do that, I go, you know what? I'm not an attorney and I can't tell you, but that's a great question to ask your Legal Shield attorney.
I like it. That's a great question to ask Lisa. That's what I'm going to tell him. Yeah. And you say that's a great question to ask Jessica, and
then
we're out of it.
I was thinking the same thing.
Awesome. I mean, I tell people I played on the softball team for the law school at the University of Montana, so I might have gotten the first year of law school by just sheer osmosis playing catcher behind the plate. But no, I'm not an attorney, so please don't ask me your legal questions. But that's a great question for the Legal Shield attorneys.
Well, that's sometimes that's what a good business owner does, I think, is direct people in the right direction to find the answers that they're looking for. And if you can help them, that's great. But giving away all of your expertise before you hook the client into paying you for your work, I think we're all guilty of that, certainly. I try my best not to. And it is a challenge sometimes, definitely.
I find that I'm even worse at it if I feel like it's a bigger client. Like if it's going to be a corporate client and, oh, they're going to sign a contract for a year and it's a substantial retainer every month, that before I realize it, I've given away way too much in the proposal stage trying to close the client.
Well, I think that's sometimes strategic too, don't you think?
Yeah.
I don't think there's anything terribly wrong with that if you are mindful about what you're doing and you pay attention.
I think I want a higher close rate. I need to work on the close rate there.
You just need to set expectations.
True.
And so if you are giving away a lot of information, those are the expectations that you're setting
with
for the people that you're talking to. Yeah. So
I worry about that.
Yeah. I know very early on I had to stop people from getting out. I mean, Lisa does most of our networking, and now we've brought on Catherine Davis, and so we're expanding in that area. And I don't do as much networking, but oh my gosh, the first year or two, people were always wanting to like get out their phone, get out their tablet. How do you do this? What does this mean on my phone? And it was real, that was a pretty easy boundary to define quickly. Like, you know, I would love to help you. We have options. You can sign up for individual mentoring and coaching. We have classes, but you know, it, because they will take your whole networking time with you fixing something on their phone. How do you say this in Spanish, Morgan? Yeah. How do you say this? It's just a couple sentences. Uh-huh. I have an email. Can you just help me real quick with that?
Oh, yeah. I've been forwarded emails that are written in Spanish by people asking if, you know, what does it mean?
Did you just mind translating that for me?
Yeah. Generally, it's like, this is a scam. Delete it. Do not click the link.
Yeah.
That's my advice.
See, we don't find giving away. I have an issue more with people and asking for discounts
as opposed to giving.
It's same idea.
It's the same idea. Yeah, it's very much the same idea.
Why aren't you on Groupon? Why aren't you, if I have 10 people, could I have this? And if I
asking for that extra free thing.
Right.
Yeah.
Do you not offer any sort of?
We offer some. We have a military discount, teacher discount, you know, some of those. And then we'll have sales every once in a while. But
You're really reasonably priced.
We are.
I agree.
We did lower our prices.
There's just not a lot of wiggle room.
Really?
Correct.
Wow.
So two last topics that we're going to go for. One, because we're wrapping up on time, and I didn't do my at the half hour. I was supposed to say you're listening to Ask the Gals with Two Busy Gals, our amazing podcast on Business Radio X Tucson. So two last things. So jump in on either one. Building a support network. So what kind of challenges? One of the quotes in the article said, having a robust support network is essential. I think we would all agree to that. It's no surprise, 48% of female founders report that a lack of available advisors and mentors has limited their professional growth. So in that case, they're specifically, I know they were talking about, you know, you're a CFO or you're a CEO, like you're growing your company. And so you want to talk to another CEO who potentially has gone for a $100,000 loan or those kind of things and having a challenge of finding people to mentor and support. So has anyone felt like you've had challenges or do you feel like you were able to kind of get that support network together for you?
I feel very supported in the community in Tucson. What I'm finding is that as supportive as folks might be, they are not my clients. So I'm having to branch out into settings where maybe I wouldn't just by nature be, like, for instance, in the construction industry and certain sectors where a need for translation and interpretation exists that maybe isn't necessarily my first group of folks that I would be going to hang out with. So I'm trying to expand in that way, as fun as networking events can be. And I do enjoy getting to know the small business owners that make Tucson what it is, and all of the amazing folks that have these incredible businesses that I love and support. I'm finding that I need to find different types of support, meaning the business support, the financial support. So I've been branching out a little bit from that network. And as far as mentoring, I really enjoy the resources offered by SCORE. If anyone listening has never heard of SCORE, find SCORE in your community in Tucson. It is vibrant and available
incredible
and free.
Incredible resources and free.
Really amazing group of folks that volunteer their time to mentor.
Absolutely.
Business owners from every level, from starting business all the way to selling one.
Yeah. I was surprised because my knowledge of SCORE was that it was very focused on starting business because a lot of their workshops focus there. But now that I've become more involved, I have found so much out about the mentorship that's available the whole way through. Oh, I want to sell my business. And how do I get a good sale for my business? If I want to sell my business in 5 years, what do I need to do now? And they will coach you through that because some of them have sold multiple multi-million dollar businesses.
So I think with Legal Shield, we deliver our services in the direct sales arena. And they statistically, they say they're probably more million-dollar women business owners of direct sales companies than any other types of companies.
That's true.
But Legal Shield just recently wanted to really test that and find out. So they have created something called the Ladies of Justice because they know that women oftentimes network differently. They're looking for different things. They're working with kids. They're, you know, balancing two different lives. So they have really built a whole department, for lack of a better word, of just women. They've taken some of the top money earners of Legal Shield, and these women go out and they put together literature, they've put together calls, things like that, just for women doing business in Legal Shield.
Cool. That's fantastic.
Very cool. Well, I think we're at about time. So what I would like to say, our last point is about balancing business and family life. And there was a quote that now I can't find because Anthony Bourdain passed away. And so the quote I want to find about him, I can't find because every time you search for him anywhere now, you just find out about he passed away. But I read a quote from him years ago, and he talked about, he probably had a cuss word in it, but he said, you know, balance is BS. He was like, whatever you're doing, be in it 100%. And I think a lot, especially of young women that I talk to, are like, I'm going to be able to do everything. And I'm like, not well, not all the time. Like, so before you drive yourself crazy, but I like the idea of when you're doing your business, be 100% about your business. When you're with whatever your personal life may be, you know, Allison's rescue dogs or significant others or kids, be 100% about that when you're there. And I think if we don't try to kind of pursue this a little bit of everything all the time, we won't be taking calls necessarily from our kids in the middle of important business stuff because they'll know that that's not cool unless, you know, I'm like, are you in an ambulance? Is there blood gushing on the floor? That's when you can interrupt. That's interruption time. But also not always just checking your phone when you're hanging out with your kids, you know, or whatever for you is your kids. For me, it's kids. But
well, they talk about work-life balance. Mm-hmm. And there really is no, there's no such thing.
No.
It's an imbalance. So you go off to work and you kind of veer off that way. And then when you're done with that,
yep,
you go back to, you know, to your family life. So the whole idea of I want to have work-life balance, that's a misnomer.
That and that's amazing advice for us to close on from Allison, who's a 35-year business entrepreneur. And I'm yes, I'm going to say that because that's freaking awesome and inspirational. So I want to thank Lisa and Shelley and Morgan and Allison for joining us. I'm Jessica with Ask Two Busy Gals, the Two Busy Gals. You have all the contact information right there with the post. So reach out to us and you have the contact information for all our lovely guests. Until next month.